Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. This year, Wisconsin Cheese is hosting the very first Art of Cheese Festival to celebrate all things curds. Head to www.artofcheesefestival.com for your tickets to pastured paradise.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson. Souther, you're back, buddy.
Welcome back.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't be around last week. It's going to tie in a little bit, I think, to some of the conversation we're going to have today. I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, doing an Amore Amargo Misguided Spirits pop-up at a bar called Puffer Fish. Seems reasonable for Amore Amargo to be at a tiki bar. and we raised almost $2,500 in the evening for another rally going out to the folks in Maui who, you know, are still suffering from the damage from the fires.
Oh, good for you, man.
That's great.
Yeah. But admit that I was literally on a plane when you guys were on the air last week, so I couldn't be on the show, which was a bummer because it was the show about our box, which is it's now landing in people's homes. We're getting a lot of social media buzz about it. I think, I just this morning saw someone raving about the Pandana and someone else raving about the bathtub gin old fashioned. So I think we're off and running.
I had no idea how many tiny ceramic and glass bathtubs there were out there in the world until I made this drink and people were tagging me on an Instagram. And I love it and keep doing it. The more drinks I see out there garnished with tiny little rubber duckies, the better.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the more people we can introduce to both Shaker and Spoon and maybe Ford's Gin, and hopefully maybe the box will get people that have never heard of us to point it our way. I think it's such a great collaboration, and it's really awesome.
And it was fun. It was just really fun to do, and it's cool to, like, you know, see this this syrup that I just kind of, you know, whipped up in my kitchen at 2 o'clock in the morning like a mad scientist, actually, in like a really like professional little bottle, you know, with like an actual label printed by an actual person who's good at graphic design.
Yeah. And then also just the grand scale of it all, you know, their subscribership, of course, ebbs and flows with the time of year. But, you know, whatever that little syrup you made to make a couple of cocktails, they scaled it up to make literally thousands, tens of thousands.
It's crazy.
I know. So weird to think of like something I made up in just like a giant vat somewhere in a warehouse.
Feels good though.
Exactly. Yeah. Feels like we made it.
Maybe we're doing all right. One of these days we'll get it together. But otherwise, you know, I've got a couple other projects on the horizon. I'm going to my third season of my online Gush class begins next week. So people can still sign up for that. There's a link in the Speakeasy Instagram bio to that. It's going to be cool. And then a couple of random things that I'm doing, you know, for the holiday season, I always do something. So this year I'm gearing up to make 1,000 bottles of my own hot sauce. And then I've got, this is a crazy story that has nothing to do with anything. We had to close Café de l'Enfer so that we could move Amok Garden in there. But the problem is we had already ordered these beautiful tiki mugs to arrive to Café de l'Enfer. So now I have 100 tiki mugs that say Café de l'Enfer on them that I have to put together some kind of program and sell those guys as well. So
I'm imagining a lot of skulls and demon wings. Like, what do they even look like?
Yeah. I'll post a photo of one, but, it's like a goat's foot. It's got skulls on it for sure. It's got a craggy looking sort of demon flying around. I mean, it's crazy. It's made by Tiki Diablo. They're hand numbered. They're pretty cool. Can't wait to do something with them. They you know, we closed the bar 3 months ago. They just arrived last week because they were already in production. You can't stop the machine, you know, like it's, and the machine being, you know, human hands that make these things, they're really cool. And we were really excited to have them up at the bar. You know, even when we decided we had to close, we reached out to them and they were like, too late guys. It's almost done. So anyway, you know, these are the things that happen when you have to be nimble.
Well, I'll take one. I feel like that's a nice wedding of my appreciation for tropical cocktails and our Dark Lord Satan. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. I'll tell you what. I'll say it right here on the air for people to hear and hold me accountable. You'll get cups number one and two. And to make it fair, I'll box them up and mix them up, and I don't know who gets which.
All right.
Nice.
Southern doesn't have a favorite kid. He loves them all equally.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, you mentioned another round, another rally that you're out there for, which has actually been on our show earlier this year. We had Chris was out here talking about that in June for Pride Month and some of the great work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. But we also have some interesting guests in the studio with us who also dovetail nicely into that great organization. Who are we talking to today, guys?
Joining us all the way from Phoenix, we've got Kaylee Asher and Jason Asher here to talk to us about, well, among other things, we're going to get into a little bit of another round, another rally. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
How are things out in Phoenix today? Cold?
It's freezing. It stormed last night pretty heavily. Our monsoon season is a little late this year, and so it's nice and cool, but humid this morning.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask if you got hit by the hurricane at all.
Felt like one last night for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
it was nuts.
You have to get one of those Cafe Lanfair mugs and serve a hurricane for yourself in it. That's a terrible joke. But I'm just trying to sell these tiki mugs that showed up late for you, Souther.
I appreciate it, buddy. All efforts are appreciated.
You said tiki mugs and you mentioned Tiki Diablo, who's a good friend of ours, and the fact that he did a goat's foot for you. Man, that's opening a huge box of opportunity, Danny. I hope you're listening to this. Coming after you, buddy.
Yeah, I think I've got one within reach here. I'll show it to you on the I'll show you guys. Can't show the audience, obviously, but it's pretty cool.
He's such a traditionalist, you know.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
damn.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's
he's so good.
That is
Danny carved our entire boat. We have a brand called The Undertow, and Danny is the mastermind behind all the carvings and the intricacies and the authenticity for those pieces of art that kind of are, you know, decorate our space.
Yeah, they're incredible. And the work they do is pretty powerful. And the reason that it took so long is not because they're lackadaisical or slow. It's the fact that they are incredibly busy and highly coveted. So just getting in the queue with them was an honor.
And it 18 took, months in.
And it took so long that the bar came and went. We do have high hopes at reopening the bar if we can find another location for it. We have all the decor, obviously, still. But it was a decision that had to be made because we had to move one of our other properties into the space because the space that it was in for 8.5 years became untenable. So anyway, super stoked to have them. They just arrived. I have one, like I said, right here on my desk because I'm trying to figure out how to market this thing and get it.
I would love to see your storage space.
I mean, I was maybe I wouldn't.
How many do you have?
100.
Only 100?
Well, we made a deal to buy 300. And of course they made 300. But they gave us numbers 1 through 100, and they kept 200 that they're going to sell or market or do something with themselves. And they gave us some, you know.
Well, Souther, we do this little thing called Savvy, and it caters to education, and everybody gets something to take away, and we just bake it into the ticket price. So we should talk about getting you out to Phoenix.
Oh yeah,
do
buddy.
A class, and we'll move 100 mugs for you in less than probably 90 minutes.
Nice. Oh yeah, well,
like that.
This is great. We'll talk about
especially
this off the air.
Diablo.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. I'd love to. You know, it's been forever since I've been to Arizona at all. I'm trying to think right now if I've ever been to Phoenix. So yeah, let's get it going.
Usually, people go to the giant hole in the ground up north.
Yeah. I have an Irish friend who went to the Grand Canyon, and she was like, "Yeah, it's nice, but you all are too proud of that thing. You'd think you just took a bunch of shovels and dug it yourselves." You were like, "That was there when you found it."
Yeah. We had little impact.
So I have to admit, I wanted to bring you all on this show because you guys just won the Spirited Award for Best Cocktail Bar, which, you know, congratulations to both of you. And
I would also say congratulations to Phoenix, right? I think this might be the first time a Spirited Award has been in Phoenix at all, right? Of any caliber.
Period.
So yeah. So that's amazing.
It's amazing. Thank you.
Finally getting some attention, I think, in these, you know, smaller markets.
Yeah. I agree. I definitely think this brings a lot of credibility back to kind of the voting piece and showing, maybe look at it, the West Coast really kind of took a lot of those plates home this year. And I think that smaller markets are finally starting to get travel. People are traveling to smaller markets. Mm-hmm. People are getting out. And so that's truly a testament to marketing and working closely with your CVB to get the right people into your market to see what you got going on. And people are getting out again. It's nice. It's finally nice to see travel back to where it was.
For sure. 100%.
I also think it has, when you look at who won this year, right? You've got Hey Love out of Portland. You had some awards out of San Diego, us out of Phoenix.
Happy Accidents in Happy New Mexico.
Right. And I mean, Kate's always on the road. She's a dear friend of ours. And she's just really well networked. But, you know, a lot of those markets have event activations in them, right? Portland's got Portland Cocktail Week. San Diego has San Diego Bartenders Weekend. We have Arizona Cocktail Week. You've got BCB in New York, and then you've got SoBe in Miami. And so when you look at who actually won this year, I think the reality is that those types of events are what are forcing people into certain markets that they may not typically travel to. I think historically people would always migrate to New York City to see what people were doing. I mean, I've been into your bar many times, to get some inspiration. Right. And so I think that those event activations are really pushing people into those markets, which is great.
I hope so. And I hope that people like me, like Damon, like Greg are also out there doing our part to give voice to those places. And also I travel to those places. Like I said, last week I was in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a typical cocktail destination city, right?
Right.
Yet we went to some great bars there. In fact, we went to a bar called Bryant's that boasts having opened just after Prohibition, still operating in the same way. They've never had a menu. So they operate in the way that, you know, modern cocktail bars operate with the chit chat to create a cocktail for you specifically. They claim to be the home of the pink squirrel. You know, that's incredible. That's history right there. And it's in Milwaukee.
I know, yeah.
You know? Yeah, what a claim. but it was great. You know, it was a great spot. It was really dimly lit. And you know, they're like, we don't do menus. We talk to you and consult and we bring cocktails out. So, I mean, these things exist in these smaller markets, and I'm glad that they're getting some attention.
I agree. We travel a lot as well. And I think we're always generally very impressed with what we see in other markets.
Yeah. You know, I think there's only two or three bartenders I know from Arizona, and they all worked at Maison Premier. So it's like, it's right. Kind of a funny thing that, like, you know, and I'm from Oklahoma.
We love her too.
Yeah, totally. So like about me being from Oklahoma, it's like, I really like to champion like Oklahoma City and Tulsa as these places that have these great cocktail bars. Cause now they do. When I lived there and was first getting into bartending, I got to work at the only cocktail bar that was there. And it was like nothing like what we see today. So it's just really cool. Like to me, there was a big thing that happened in the mid 19th century with just the explosion of cocktail books and people writing about cocktails and magazines and newspapers, and like all of a sudden there was access to the information, right? And there was also more distribution of crazy ingredients like citrus. Ooh, it was the new fancy thing, right? But like it's definitely like that with, you know, obviously it's been that way for a couple of decades now, but it's starting to really. I remember the first time I saw an issue of Imbibe magazine, and I bring this up every once in a while. It was like 15 years ago, probably. And, you know, up until that point, like you were saying, it was always a cocktail from a bar in New York or LA or San Francisco or maybe Chicago. And this one issue came out and it was like St. Louis, Kansas City, and like Colorado Springs. And I was like, all right, here we fucking go. Like this is, it's happening now, you know? So it's cool. And I don't sure. think of any market as like a B or C market. I never really did because I come from a D market, you know, but it's like, I think there's something kind of inherent with being a cocktail lover and a lover of bars that you do have that kind of transient mentality and that you are, but you like to explore, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I can say that all of us, we plan our vacations around where we're going to eat and drink and like maybe distilleries we're going to visit or wineries. So I think it's just really cool that people are starting to give credit to these non-New York and California markets, you know, like you were saying before. So, And also, you know, like mentioned Kate Gerwin, like I've been going to New Mexico all my life since I was a little kid. And like one of my biggest things is I love the food there and I love the ingredients. And there's a lot of that kind of sense of place when it comes to Arizona. It's very similar in that way. I have a saguaro cactus tattooed on my arm right here just for you guys. but there's just a really cool thing going on there. And I love that you got this award and now there's a bigger spotlight on Arizona in that scene. It's so, so good for everyone.
Thanks, man.
Because I also get sick of traveling to the same places all the time anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that a little bit. You got the award, and it's because your place is such a – I mean, obviously, you've got great cocktails, but you're also really striving to create an immersive environment. Talk about that some and how that entices and engages your guests.
You want me to? All right. You know, we had a small bar called Counterintuitive a while back, and – it was our first bar, and that bar changed concept every 6 months. Rather than just changing the menu, we would just change the entire space. We'd rip the back bar out, we'd put a new bar in, we would do a full new menu, we would change all the walls, we would move the walls around, we would do all kinds of things, right? We were fucking crazy. But what it really did was it pushed us to look at this idea of immersion. It wasn't just a menu. Now the place felt like a Mexican restaurant, right? We don't think about going to a spot like a Mexican restaurant and feeling like we're immersed because it's a Mexican restaurant. But really, if I ate Mexican food in an Italian restaurant, it would be fucking weird. So when you go to a Mexican restaurant, you're immersed into their culture by the colors, by the decor, by the smells, by the music, right? And it really didn't change from a bar. When you look at a bar, you're like, okay, I'm in a bar. Where am I? I'm in a bar. Oh, it's an Irish pub. Okay, well, I'm immersed in Irish culture. Well, am I? Because they're playing hip hop on the music. Mm-hmm. Yes, the walls are made of wood and so is the bar top, but they're slinging shots of whatever over the bar. So it doesn't really feel immersive. So once we began to kind of go down that road and dip our toe in that water, we literally became addicted. And we decided to do an event and Undertow was born. And because Undertow was born, Undertow was truly an immersive idea, right? Tiki being incredibly immersive, really the precursor to a lot of what we do today, including Century Grand. And we figured if we could do it for Tiki and we could do it with a boat, then we could do it for moderate, like regular cocktails, and we could do it with something different, in this case, a train. And so Century Grand was born. And eventually the space evolved. During the pandemic, we lost our lease for the Undertow. Negotiations didn't go well. And the only option we had was either to sign a new lease, find a new location and start over, or move it into a pre-existing space that we had room for. We unfortunately had just invested funds and money in building out a humongous restaurant. But that sank cost seemed better for us than to sign a new 10-year lease, which could total $2-3 million, depending on how much that lease was valued at. And so we moved it in. And when that happened, the space really became alive. We had to figure out a way to join a boat and a train into one space. And we did that through a rickhouse. And we did that in such a way that I call it our docklands. It's this idea of the transcontinental finally connecting the East and the West. And instead of a ship taking weeks to travel around the country to get to the other side, they're picking up in port and in days, they're shipping it across the country. And really that is that spot. That is that spot where our worlds collide in the building and you enter this rickhouse and the building is full of haze so that all the corners are curved and all the illusion is really there. And we want you to kind of allow yourself to let go. And once you get in and you begin to navigate through our space, if you're there to catch a boat, you board a 19th century clipper ship modeled after the Flying Cloud. Or if you hang a left to go into the train station side of Century Grand and board the train on platform 18, you're taken through the bayou on a train ride where the seats vibrate with every single nook and cranny on the track. Mm-hmm. Or if you're waiting for a train, you just pop out and you get off at platform 18 and you walk across right into the apothecary that is the Gray Hen. And those bars together really make up what is the Century Grand. And the Century Grand is this really special space that ebbs and flows like you would imagine a busy London dockland kind of vibe where there's a lot of people hustling and bustling, coming and going from the bars. but there to create an amazing experience. And of course, some of the drinks come with theatrics. Some of the drinks come with a skit to really kind of pull people into the moment. So I think, Kaylee, did I cover it all?
So yeah, I mean, I think you explained it really well. When we had to merge these two concepts together during COVID, we really had to focus on just eliminating kind of the low margin items, right? We 6.5 months closed, not too bad in consideration compared to other markets. And I was selling booze out the back door, launched an online store, and had Jason doing virtual cocktail happy hours, teaching people how to make the drinks every single weekend. It felt like it was prohibition again, me just slinging whiskey up the back. But, you know, Greyhen was there and it was a whiskey shop. We have over 500 different whiskeys from all around the world in that space. And then obviously other high-end spirits in addition to that. And we, you know, put a fully functioning bar in that space in 2020. And then we also added the trees and kind of this patio area directly outside of the whiskey shop. So it really is this kind of fully immersive space. The train has a horn. It goes off. It blows smoke bellowing out into the space. There's these little like fake fireflies that spin around in the sky. And so when you come in, you hear all of these sounds, you see kind of all of these key elements. And then as Jason mentioned, inside the train, there are these kind of low frequency subwoofers that really lowly vibrate the seats, obviously not in the bar stools because you can't install them in the bar stools. But so when people do sit down, they feel, you know, so it's just sight, sound, smell, taste. You're fully immersed with all of your five senses into this completely different environment. And really, I think the point of that was to get people to kind of just step out of their everyday life, right? The whole point of Tiki historically was to allow people to escape from their daily life. They, you know, it really launched and emerged through the Great Depression, and these people couldn't afford to probably travel or take vacations, and travel international wasn't very wasn't prominent back then. And so it was that same kind of pillar that we wanted to put into the rest of those concepts, was how can we get people to just let go and be with us and be in the present and be with the people that they're with for 90 minutes, right? That's our ask. Mm-hmm. You got 90 minutes, be fully immersed in this environment and just kind of not think about what else is going on outside of these walls.
As a guest, if I arrive there, is it standard for me to choose one and stick, or do people maneuver through the space while they're there?
You know, it really depends. We have three different reservation systems because they are their own entities. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of guests will book one. Platform 18 is probably the busiest and the most popular, with Undertow being the second busiest, but Undertow also has more seating. So they generally run really great numbers. So a lot of people will do one, or they'll do one and then a second one. We don't always recommend doing all three because they're 90 minute seatings, which puts you at 4.5 hours in the bar with no food.
Amazing.
It's a little dangerous. even the ice cream has booze in it. So, you know, right. It's like, we always recommend people do two if they're going to do multiple concepts, but oftentimes people will like come, you know, they'll come for the train and then they'll want to go into Tow, or they'll want to go into Greyhen, or they'll come to Undertow and then they'll want to go into Greyhen. And it's interesting because a lot of the industry people actually love Greyhen. And I think that's all collectively kind of our favorite space. And it has probably the least amount of immersiveness, but it's just really like cozy and tight. And the hospitality is great in all of the rooms. Our team does a really great job, but I think that space is exceptional just because there's a really limited number of seats. So your bartender really gets to engage with you.
That's so cool.
I mean, it sounds fantastic, and it's making me want to book a flight to Phoenix right away.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like three Tales of the Cocktail award-winning radio hosts that show up, can we do the 4.5 hour experience?
Yes, I'll put you on the 4.5 hour tour.
You're a veteran.
And I'll feed you before or after.
we'll sign the waiver.
It's fine.
Well, in the notes that you sent over about the show today, you know, the one that caught my eye the most, because it's something that I strive to do as well, I want to hear you talk and tell us about what it's like to run a cocktail bar driven by data and facts. more than it is by emotion, because I feel like a lot of us get into this field because we love it and we're passionate. And frankly, I think all bartenders are alphas. And so we all want to be the top dog. But then you have to make decisions like the one that I made that I talked about at the top of the show. We had to kill our baby to make our oldest property survive, right? So these are just the decisions that you have to make. Talk about the things that you've had to do or the things that you do currently that allude to that.
Well, I think Jason could probably speak on the implementation of the back of house inventory management system, and then I can touch on marketing analytics and just how we collectively meet together as a team to review data. Jay, do you want to talk about inventory?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we've always ran a fairly tight ship when it comes to our numbers. Everything is pretty is really driven around spreadsheets and factual data. When we moved Undertow into the building, it brought in an additional 50 drinks. So the cocktail the building now had was starting to flex at 125 to 130 drinks in one building. And all of it was custom. Every single drink had two custom ingredients in it, maybe more, depending on the program, depending on the extensiveness of the program. And so it was really, really challenging. And I had a hard time managing the growth of our team members, the growth of each room, because the streams began to cross a little bit. And even though as a whole, our numbers looked tight, they could be better. And there was no way to really manage the individuals within the rooms or the rooms themselves while only having like one set of data to look at. And so we broke everything into parts. We broke every store into its own store so that we could look at it, you know, in a really clear and I would say factual based way so that we could then coach our teams. In addition to that, to keep things clear, then we laid in software to manage the inventory on the back of the house and converted our back of the house into a commissary, which was humongous. It kept everything really clean. And then now we run our entire company like a hotel. So everything comes into a commissary, it turns into something new, and then the bars requisition.
Got it.
Place an order from the commissary, and then the commissary sends things out. Yeah, so for stores that operate independently, it's like a 30 to 40% subsidized by the commissary, 30 to 40%. For stores that are in the building where the commissary is, they're subsidized 95% by the commissary.
Right.
Yeah. So they run really low inventories. Like an Undertow in Gilbert holds a 50-something, $60,000 inventory. And we can manage to that, and we can coach to that. And then the Undertow in Arcadia, our flagship, our old OG store, holds like a $19,000 inventory because they don't need to hold anymore because the commissary is right there. Yeah.
So for our listeners, because I've done this before with a group that I used to run, and it made such a huge difference on the P&Ls and COGS at the end of the day, right? So really what we're talking about here, a major impact when it comes to, say, like, buying a bottle or two of whiskey here and buying cases and getting case breaks for like larger orders of wine or vodka or whatever it is. It's like you're actually like coming out even further ahead and it's more accountable. And like what Souther was saying, it's like with Café L'Enfer, it's like they had to replace that with one of their oldest properties, but L'Enfer can come back and yeah. You know, definitely not. It doesn't have the longevity or the history that it was Avant Garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but just from that data, just looking at it, you can kind of make bigger decisions on how to really kind of streamline and improve each one of the stores, as you put it, Jason. So that's just wanted to kind of like break it down that way for the listener, because it is really cool once you get into it. It's like understanding how you can actually be profitable with each one of these entities under the umbrella, right? And that's why you do it.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing is it helps to provide, I think, easily digestible data that is easy for a bartender that's learning, up and coming, climbing the ladder, trying to be a bar manager or a bar manager trying to be a GM or whatever. It gives them another way to look at data. And I think bartenders look at things in a very specific way. Business owners look at things in a very specific way, right? Bar managers want to know what their pour cost is. And owners look at very different numbers, including pour cost. But again, this provides better data, digestible data. And they can tell me, I could say, hey, tell me what you used in lemon yesterday. And they could say, oh, I used 87 ounces of lemon juice. In fact, every Tuesday, I only use between 80 and 90 ounces every Tuesday. Oh, great. That's really good to know. And I can tell you to the minute, you know what I mean? So
right.
because yeah. the data is much easier to find and digest, it gives our bar managers the empowerment to make better decisions, to make more be like price conscious, inventory conscious decisions. And I think that's huge. And that gives them the factual based decision-making, and they can say, hey, listen, you know, we sandbag 10%, but it just so happens that this one drink that uses grapefruit went nuts today. And we needed four more quarts of grapefruit. You can't judge, you can't make that call, but they can get close, right? And now waste, all of our waste now goes back into a repurposement too. So anytime things come back, they get turned into something new. And so we don't really throw anything away anymore, which is also really awesome. And the commissary is part of that. Yeah.
But even on a, like just on a payroll kind of perspective for your staff, like for whoever's on prep, whoever's juicing those quarts of lemon juice and grapefruit juice, and you know that we need 90 ounces, and not this guesswork of like, we're just go ahead and do four quarts today or whatever it is. It's right. like, okay, I've banged out the 90 ounces, now onto the next thing. So you get more yep. productivity out of the staff. And it's like, that's a big part of it too, right?
Yep. 100%.
Yeah, greater efficiency there. Listen,
what does the staff say when you like put these tools in their hands? Like, I'm just curious, because I know bartenders can be very sort of like, you know, pie in the sky, creative dreamer types. definitely not speaking about myself here or anything like that. So I can imagine there might be a little bit of like, you know, I don't need data, I'm an artist. But like when you give these things to your staff, what's sort of the reaction? Like, how do they feel once they have all of this data at their disposal?
I would say they feel empowered 100%. I mean, it's really great when somebody feels like they own their business.
Totally.
And that's kind of the way we talk about it. Are they owning their business? Do you know your business? Like, talk to me about it. You know, hey, why did you dump two quarts of lime juice last week? What happened? Oh, you know, I overestimated. I didn't pull my numbers from the previous 4 weeks to adjust my average. And that's what happened. I'll make sure that I do that next week. Okay, great. And yeah. then it goes back to the kitchen, and then they strip it down, turn it to clear, and then we repurpose it in another clarified application.
Yeah. I would say that the two of the three women that are bar managers for us have been with us for 4 years. One just hit her 4-year anniversary, and the other one is on her almost her four-year anniversary. And I would say that when they came in and began working with us, maybe that was a little bit more of their personality. But as they have, you know, grown and developed while being employed with us, they really are very receptive. I think that a lot of people come in working for, you know, or wanting to work with our business, knowing that they're going to come out better on the other side. And so there's a lot of people. I would say that Jason is a huge mentor in this community. I mean, he's one of my biggest mentors. We've been together for 10 years. And when I met him, I was a bartender. But you know, we have two individuals that own four bars here in town that used to work for us for 4 years. And then two other individuals that are owner operators for another cocktail bar in town. And so, and then one of our other individuals that was just with us for 5 years just left because he wants to go and do his own thing. So, you know, I think there is a history of people that work with us, and, you know, training these people to understand data and being able to operate a business based on facts and based on number is only going to be better, because I think that's the reason why we have such a high failure rate in the restaurant and bar industry is yeah. because they are not prepared. A lot of them don't have a formal business education. They're not prepared to understand or digest data. They don't necessarily know how to run a P&L. And then in addition to that, they don't have a general understanding of marketing. And so, you know, it's kind of this like perfect storm of not having enough information or having somebody who's a mentor to actually give you the right information so that you learn how to actually manage your business.
Yeah. So you guys are creating this beautiful sort of family tree out there based on the knowledge and opportunities that you give all your teams. I want to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, but I want to come back and talk to you about your self-published book, Mise en Place Marketing, right? Which is kind of what you're about to lead into, a little bit of the marketing talk, which I think is highly valuable and extremely important for people in our business. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to come right back and keep chatting with our friends from Phoenix.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin certainly knows their cheese. The only state that requires a license to cheese, they take the craft very seriously. That's why this year, Wisconsin Cheese is hosting the very first Art of Cheese Festival to celebrate all things curds. From September 29th to October 1st, you too can join the Jubilee. Over the course of the festival, you can learn how to pair cheese like a pro. Art of Cheese is thrilled to offer classes on pairing cheese with wine from the industry's leading sommeliers, cocktails from spirits experts, chocolate, and coffee. Yes, coffee, with cheese, from a former cheesemonger. At Art of Cheese, you can level up your artisanal cheesemaking knowledge with a curds-on deep dive amongst the cream of the crop and celebrate all things cheese by dancing the night away as the belle of the Wisconsin Cheese Ball. You won't want to miss out on finding your next favorite cheese at the party of the year. Head over to www.artofcheesefestival.com for your tickets to Pastured Paradise.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy here on HRN. And today we're talking to our friends Jason and Kaylee Asher of a bunch of different concepts out in Phoenix, a bunch of different Spirited Award-winning concepts out there. Before the break, we touched a little bit on marketing and running the business side of a bar, which is not a skill set that I think you find a lot in people who are attracted to this. You know, this line of work attracts a lot of, you know, kind of Jack Kerouac free spirit types. But Kaylee, you have a book out about marketing that you published yourself. So tell me a little bit about that and kind of what some of your goals were for that book. Whose hands did you want this book to wind up in?
Sure. Here it is. I printed, I actually self-published it through Amazon KDP. So a lot of people don't know that Amazon has its own platform that does on-demand printing. And so instead of going through all of the hoops of trying to find a publisher, it's a very small and easy to digest book. But, you know, I think that from us being cocktail bar owners for nearly 9 years, we've learned a lot. We've made a lot of mistakes. And there's a lot of people who don't succeed, right? They end up closing their doors within 5 years. And for me, you know, why, if we have already learned all this information, why wouldn't we provide it to other people so that they don't necessarily make the same mistakes? So I put this book together. I started it in November last year, and then I just launched it at the end of July.
That's so awesome. I didn't realize that they had that that option to where you could self-publish a book. That's really cool. That means you can say fuck as many times as you want without a publisher or editor getting in the way. That's perfect. Yeah.
And I own it, right? I own the copyright. I got the trademark on Mise en Place Marketing. And so it's 100% mine. It's all awesome. On-demand print. So when somebody actually orders it, they just print it and ship it directly to them. And you know, I get a percentage of royalties on each book that sells. So really it was intended to be kind of a passive stream of income.
That's great.
You know, and I mean, Sather, you've got books, right? I'm sure you've had to go through all of the fun hoops and processes of that. And it's a lot, but you know, for me, it's really straightforward. It's like, hey, you know, you can either do the marketing yourself or you can outsource it. Here are the pros and cons of each. Let's go through every single marketing tactic or strategy, and then you should identify as an owner operator which ones you want to be able to do yourself and which ones you need to outsource. And I think the reality, though, is that a lot of the times marketing gets thrown to the wayside because people who have small businesses, you know, operations take precedence, right? If you've got a broken toilet or your staff called out sick or, you know, your cups didn't show up or whatever it is, right? Your liquor order didn't arrive. Like those things are priorities because those are the things that you need to happen to be open. And so, you know, writing a social media post isn't necessarily required for you to be able to open your doors. But in the reality though, marketing is the lead generator for your business. And so I think a lot of the times people open, they're very busy for the first 2 months and then business settles. And then they don't know how to be proactive enough to create marketing programs around continuing to grow and develop your business, find guest retention, explore ways to find new guests, and then even fish where the fish are. I feel like a lot of the times people that own bars and restaurants or are operators are kind of just throwing spaghetti at the wall. They're like, oh yeah, okay. Somebody approaches them and says, hey, we're selling this ad, you know, this print ad for this X amount of price. And they're like, oh, we'll try it this time, right? And they don't. There's no actual way to manage the ROI on that. and you're not actually able to track the campaign. So I think with the new emergence of digital, you have so many more opportunities to track some tangible ROI on your business and see where people, you know, you're actually generating leads to your business. And so that's really what I've been focusing on wholly for the last few years of our business. Once we kind of reopened for COVID, you know, we've got Google Analytics on our website and we have Google Search Console. So we're checking how our SEO is performing. We've got content marketing on the website and writing blogs. I have social media marketing. I finally hired a PR agency that's helping me with active pitches, right? And it's funny because like a lot of people hate Yelp, like a lot of people like to hate on Yelp, but the reality is like, you know, we're getting 4,000 to 5,000 people a month to our website just from Yelp. And there's a lot of intentionality there. If people are going to Yelp, they're like, I want to eat something today, right? So why wouldn't you advertise on Yelp if it's going to grow your visibility opportunity to that guest base by 100%?
Yeah. Yeah, I love what you said. You know, go where the fish, you know, fish where the fish are. I think you're right.
Fish where the fish are in the Arizona desert.
That's great.
Cast the line right off of that boat. And I get the great sense that you, you know, being motivated to put this book out on your own means you're highly, you know, engaged with the notion of education and educating people around you. And it sounds like that's what you do at your shops as well. So really, I'm definitely going to get this book because I think it's something that I need. You know, we're still kind of, you know, not fishing where the fish are, even though we've been around for a long time. You know, my group has only really formed during the pandemic, but we've had all these restaurants and bars all this time. We ran them totally separately. Man, talk about looking at data and having it not make any sense. You know, now we're trying to do some commissary stuff and things like that. So this is right up my alley. And speaking of education, you're also you hold the seat of the educational chair for the USBG out in Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
Well, talk to us a little bit about what engagements you get into with that.
Well, you know, I would say that the USBG changed my life. I'm from Vegas originally. I worked in nightclubs. I was a bottle service girl for 8 years. And I met Jason through a mutual friend. His name is Gaston Martinez. He was a brand ambassador for Milagro for a really long time, very close friend. But I was in a training to bartend at a new bar downtown in Vegas. And I was with Mr. Andrew Pollard. I'm not sure if you are familiar with Andrew, but he worked at Cosmopolitan as their mixologist for a long time. And now he's at the Venetian. And I was in a training with Mr. Andrew Pollard, and I asked him how I could get a Fernet coin. And he told me I needed to join the USBG. And this is like 11 years ago. So I joined and I got exposed to people like Bobby Gleason and Tony Abuganum and Marina Mercer and Kristen Schaefer, now Vesely. And so all of these wonderful, amazing people that were really, really involved, obviously Nectali from Herbs and Rye, with the USBG in the Vegas market. And it was a very tight group of people. And Jason came to town and we met and we've pretty much been together ever since. So I can hands down tell you that my life wouldn't be the same if I hadn't joined the USBG. And so I was an active member for a really long time, obviously let my membership lapse during COVID. But with 2020, I feel like a lot of the veterans in the industry kind of left. And so everybody, every market was left with a lot of green people. And I think that there was a really big need for education. And so I came back and I approached the local USBG and I said, I want to be involved and I want to be involved, you know, to help curate education. We also have a lot of opportunities with Jason and I traveling. We have really great relationships. Jillian Bose is one of Jason's best friends. Tyson Bueller is also one of Jason's best friends. And so, you know, with the connections that we have, how can we leverage those relationships and get the right education into the market? And especially with making North America's 50 best bars this year and winning best US cocktail bar with Tails, we're leveraging that to do a lot of pop-up activations in the building. One, to curate community in this market. And so getting the rest of the industry to come in and support, obviously promote in-house marketing programming to drive sales and revenue. And then also we're requiring all those people to do a masterclass. And I think that's what we're seeing a big shift in as a whole internationally. If you're doing any type of pop-up activations in London or Mexico, or even like we're going to Singapore soon, a lot of people want you to do some sort of class component.
Yep.
And we've been doing that for a really long time as with our Savvy programming, but we're requiring all those people to teach a class. And so we've got We just had Kevin Dietrich from PCH, who is an amazing person and has an amazing team, come and pop up. And he taught a class about generous hospitality, which I think a lot of younger people don't really have a grasp on, like the hospitality maybe our generation wants to see. Mm-hmm. I have Allegory coming. I have Rayo from Mexico City coming. I have Death & Co. coming. And so it's a really great opportunity. Yes, I will always have you.
I saw you
at Tails at Canaan Table, but you were like surrounded by people.
Yeah.
So, we would love to have you. And so, you know, but it is a great way for us to leverage and find ways to create some synergy, right? We're going to do this programming in our bars anyways. We might as well have them do some sort of education for the community while they're here. I don't know if Jason feels this way, but I really do feel like we're given this platform and it's a tool and it's a resource. And we're doing the community a disservice if we're not providing education for the entire community, right? You have to put yourself in a position where how can I benefit the community as a whole? How can we rise, you know, all ships when the tide rises?
I love it. I mean, that's kind of a battle cry for me. High tide raises all boats. And I think that, people who gatekeep information are doing themselves a disservice as well. 100%. You know, if you've got the information, the best thing you can do is share it so that we can all kind of work from the same, playing field. That's incredible.
Why I started this show 13 years ago.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. Get the information to the people.
Get it out there. Yeah.
Yeah, and also get people, on as the show has continued. We get more and more great people on. It gets more and more. I mean, just it's a snake that eats itself eventually. And then I would be remiss. We kicked off the top of the show talking a little bit about another round, another rally. So let's get back into them a bit. A great organization that does so much good stuff for our industry. And your Skylight, again, I don't have any of my notes here. I lost it somewhere. But talk about the Skylight thing that you're doing.
Yeah. So back in 2020, as we were reopening from our closure, I really wanted to, I had talked about doing it before COVID happened. I wanted to really do this kind of like female chef paired dinner with female mixologists, because there was a lot of really amazing female chefs here in Arizona. And then obviously we closed. I wanted to do it around National Women's Equality Day, but it's in the middle of August and nobody wants to sit outside in a restaurant in the middle of August in Arizona. So I was trying to figure out how I would make that
it's
work.
It's like trying to get people to come to New Orleans in July.
Yeah.
We're going to work.
I don't mind it, but I decided to shift, right, to do an entirely like bottled cocktail program. And so I handled it myself. I asked some of the top female mixologist brand ambassadors to be mentors to 7 female bartenders here in town in Phoenix. And so I had, people reach out. I just reached out and I was like, hey, would you love to do this like maybe 6-week mentorship program? And so the people that were involved were Lynn House, Charlotte Boise, Jenna Murray, Karen Grill, Aaron Hayes, Anne-Louis. So it was like a really, Anne-Louis. And so it was a really, really great group of women. And then I just paired them with another female bartender in town. And so they came up with their cocktails with them and they kind of just, and it was very casual. It was like, hey, help them talk about ideating drinks, right? And so they all came up with their own final drinks. I had my photographer, who's a woman, take all of their photos. And then also I had, one of my best friends do their labels for them. So we did cocktail labels and it was all like all women were involved. And so then we launched that. We sold them through Century Grand and we donated $4,600 to another round, another rally.
Incredible.
And so that was what kickstarted their professional development fund for women and femmes and non-binary people. And so that exists. That fund was catapulted with this program. And so the following year, Amanda and Travis, who Travis is a dear friend of ours, he's based.
Travis Nass was my my bunk mate at Camp Runamuck.
He is one of the quirkiest and funniest and sweetest human beings I've ever met. So He I'd reached out to Trav and I asked him, if we could do this, and he was like, of course. And so they approached me, about a year and a half later and said, we want to take this program. Is it okay if we kind of own it? And I said, absolutely. Just let me know how I can continue to be involved. And so, last year we were opening another Undertow location. And so I really wasn't participating that much, but they were able, and Misty really was a big part of kind of organizing the structure. And so they're creating a little bit more format. So they know they have very specific meetings where people are required to go to these classes, and it talks about leadership and it talks about building your resume. And it really just kind of empowers these women within a very short period of time, 6 weeks, because a lot of the feedback from the Speed Rack mentorship was, it was like 3 months long, and a lot of people just kind of lost engagement. And so it's really just supposed to be quick, fast. And then there's a little final event that they host where they serve those cocktails and they sell tickets, and all of those funds go to another round, another rally for that professional development
fund. I love it.
Fund.
Yeah. Very cool.
It's fun.
I mean, that's the thing. It sounds to me like you find that fun, that joy in, you know, mentoring, delivering education and helping the people around you. And I think that that's what creates longevity in our field. You know, those who create spaces that are somewhat insular and don't reach out to other people are the ones we see that don't get a lot of attention and they end up fading away. So really mm-hmm. fascinating talking to both of you today about the way you operate your businesses and the way you operate, just the way you treat your life. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks, man. He's my partner in crime.
Yeah, I mean, we've got several families, including our personals, you know, whether it's our bar family or our guest family or our personal families, you know, we try to look after everybody and, you know, the way they want to be looked after. And it's an absolute pleasure to work hard all week to find that 10 to 20% time to do this kind of thing, like mentor and, mm-hmm. and give education. And I think it's what really kind of makes the work week go by so quickly and make it worthwhile, is that extra, you know, those 5 to 10 hours a week that I get to do mentor stuff. So I couldn't agree more and echo what Kaylee's saying.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love to hear it. I love to hear people out there like spreading the knowledge and sharing the wealth. Cause yeah, that's how you wind up being totally mobbed when you go to Canaan Table in New Orleans. You know, you put yourself out there, you share so what you true. Have and it comes back to you. If people want to get in touch with, I almost like, this is one of these shows where I'm like, I could keep you guys for another hour because there's so many different projects you're working on. But if our listeners at home wanted to follow up on the things we've talked about and see what else we didn't get a chance to touch on, where is a good place to find you two?
Jay, where is a good place to find you? You don't even, you go on. So he wasn't on social media for like 3 years. He hasn't posted anything since 2019, but
I'm so jealous of that.
It's like Phil Ward, Richie Boccato, and Jason Asher. They just refuse to get on social media.
So Jason's
it's going to happen. I'll get back on there.
Jason's Instagram handle is Asher52, and then mine is Kaylee, K-A-I-L-E-E .Asher. I just changed my handle. And then we have our business website is BarterShake.com. So BarterShake.com. And then you can also follow Barter Shake on Instagram. So that's Barter N, like N as in Nancy, Shake. And then we've obviously got Century Grand, Drink Undertow. And then we're opening another bar this week called Sunny's Lounge.
Breaking news.
Yeah, Sunny's Lounge, but everyone's calling it Say Less because the tagline is Drink More, Say Less.
I love it.
So that is Say Less. And that is a neighborhood bar, no immersion, just really kind of casual. It's really meant to be an industry hangout place. So I'm hoping that we will have opportunities to do a lot of industry education in there, do a lot more pop-ups with like really fun groups. Like for instance, I would be over the moon to have like Mary McLean on from from Yacht Club, because like we just went there and their drinks were freaking so good. They were so good. They were incredible.
Yeah, it's a fun place.
Wait a sec. When were you at Yacht Club?
Last week.
Yeah, like last 3 days, 4 days ago, 5 days. Okay. I don't even know.
Yeah. I was there like a week before you guys were. How wild would that be if we were there and just like didn't run into one another? But yeah, awesome spot. I love it. Were they playing SpongeBob SquarePants when you were in there too?
Yes. Yes.
It was like Japanimation.
The first day I was in there was SpongeBob on.
Good.
Yeah. I went twice. It was good. I had to go back twice. I was like, talk about unpretentious and unassuming. Holy shit. Like,
I know. Wow.
Yeah.
So good.
Really fun place.
Yeah.
Well, great. I'll make sure I get all of those tags and links and everything into the social media posts that we do that Jason won't see. we'll point people in your direction. And, you know, maybe off the air, we should talk about getting Maury Margo to come down and do some education.
And Grand Army.
I love that.
And Grand Army.
And whatever it is that I do.
And whatever it is that Craig does. The three of us could come down with some remote equipment maybe and do a show live from the bar or from the boat or from the train. I don't know. We'll get something going. But it's been a real pleasure having you guys on. And I think that that's going to wrap up this episode of the Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Please go to heritageradionetwork.org. There's a beating heart you can click on there to donate to keep shows just like this one on the air. We really appreciate you being here. And thanks again, Jason and Kaylee from in Phoenix. Really, really awesome.
Thank thanks for having us.
All right, everybody. Cheers. Thanks so much.
Look forward to seeing you again. Yeah. Cheers. Have a good day.
Cheers. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.